Today on Straight Talk Africa, critics are asking whether U.S. African foreign policy is about promoting American values of democracy, freedom of expression, and the rule of law. Or is it driven, as some observers say, by a desire for stability and the fight against terrorism? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, June 10th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about how some political observers view U.S. policy towards Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, President Obama is expected to go to Kenya in July. Secretary of State John Kelly made a surprise visit to Somalia in May. He is the first sitting Secretary of State ever to do so and the highest-ranking U.S. official to go there in decades. My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
The unannounced three-hour visit to Mogadishu by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry signals a readiness to re-engage a country that has been a haven for militants. Kerry met with Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud and his prime minister at the heavily defended airport in Mogadishu. He addressed the Somali population by video.
We all have a stake in your success. The world cannot afford to have places on the map that are essentially ungoverned. 3 years have passed since a new provisional constitution was adopted and a parliament sworn in. With help from AMISOM, Somali forces have pushed al-Shabaab out of major population centers.
Kerry said a determined international effort has put virtually all of Somalia's pirates out of business. And he told his Somali host the U.S. is beginning the process of establishing a diplomatic mission in Mogadishu. Kerry's delegation also made a first-ever stop in Djibouti. The U.S. conducts drone strikes against extremist commanders from the East African nation. And Kerry's delegation also held talks with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta in Nairobi, offering more anti-terrorism assistance and addressing other U.S. political concerns.
America has learned in our own fight against terrorism that we have to be true to democratic values, not just because it's right, but also because it's the only sure path to security over the long term. So I am glad that today President Kenyatta reinforced his agreement with us that human rights and the rule of law have to be respected in the counterterrorism efforts, and that security officials should partner with civil society organizations, especially with those with deep roots in the communities that are scarred by terrorism.
Al-Shabaab militants have staged several deadly attacks in Kenya and elsewhere in East Africa. On April 2nd, 148 people were killed in the attack at Karisa University College. Secretary Kerry also spoke in Nairobi on other political conflicts in South Sudan.
Because of violence, because of more than 2 million people who've been displaced from their homes, with each day the ranks of the hungry and the malnourished grow, and none of this had to happen. But it did happen because the country's leaders failed to act on behalf of the best interests of their people and their nation.
And he commented on Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza's desire to seek a new five-year term.
We are deeply concerned about President Nkurunziza's decision, which flies directly in the face of the constitution of his country. And the violence that is expressing the concern of his own citizens about that choice should be listened to.
Representing President Obama, Secretary of State Kerry also attended the historic inauguration of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, assuring him the United States fully supports its efforts against the Boko Haram insurgency and its economic challenges. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C., and Dr. David Himbara, expert analyst on development issues in Africa, working as a strategist for various institutions and for private sector firms and government departments on the continent. He has also served as private secretary and strategic advisor to Rwandan President Paul Kagame. We were expected to be joined by the U.S. Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, Ambassador Robert Jackson, on today's program. But due to circumstances beyond his control, he was unable to do so. Well, we hope, of course, that one of these days we'll either bring him here or bring Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, herself. Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you another time, really, on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, William.
Thank you so much for your invitation. We're happy to participate.
You're most welcome. How was your flight from Toronto?
It's just an hour and a half away. It's just a small flight.
A city that apparently has the reputation of being one of the cleanest in the world, at least one of the top 10. Is that true?
Very much so. Top ranked.
Very interesting.
Yes.
And guess what? As far as Africa is concerned, you're talking about Johannesburg, which is under 50, somewhere in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come here immediately to you, Professor Nyang. I know that we've been at this really very many, many times, at least in the last 15 years. You happen to have, frankly, been one of the original analysts on this program called Straight Talk Africa. And in August, it turns, guess what? 15 years young.
Congratulations.
You're most welcome. We've been talking about Africa. We've been talking about U.S. policy towards Africa and what have you. You've heard, of course, that there are people who say that the emphasis seems to be more on stability and security issues, fighting terrorism, for example, as opposed really to promoting American values, talking about democracy, promoting freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of association, talking about rule of law. How do you see it so far?
Yeah, I think what is happening really for U.S. policymakers is something that Richard N. Hash at the Council of Foreign Relations made very clear to the Americans, that American leadership should pay very much attention to dealing with domestic issues and then going abroad to have legitimacy in negotiating with other people. So these ideas people are putting forward with regard to democracy, it is an attempt to replicate what has been done over the last 200 years of American republicanism elsewhere. There were a lot of problems in America from the beginning, but over time, Americans developed ways of adjusting with the problem. So when it comes to Africa, state building and nation building are the critical issues. When Bill Clinton came to the White House, he was, in a way, naive, in my opinion, to assume that those people who are emerging in East Africa we're going to be visionaries who will change Africa. It didn't happen, because what has happened really is, in many of those African countries, the legacies of Kwame Nkrumah with one-party state, with people like Leopold Senghor and Nyerere and others, gradually move away from one-party dictatorship to open the political system so that other political parties can exist.
Mm-hmm.
When Bill Clinton came to the White House, instead of pushing that frontier forward so that you will have pluralism in political parties, they begin to support people who went back to square one. That's why you have U-turn in Uganda with Museveni.
You talked about, of course, his admiration for leaders in East Africa. It's not just East Africa, maybe Eastern and Central Africa, because we are clearly talking about beginning from Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki. We go down to Ethiopia, Meles Zenawi, We go down to Uganda, Yoweri Museveni. We go to Rwanda. You could say, of course, Paul Kagame. And at the time, we're talking 1997, 98, Laurent-Desire Kabila of DRC. And he called them, at least his administration, they used to call them a new bleed of African leaders. And they went even further to say that, in fact, these people were the beacons of hope for African democracy. Is there any democracy from Asmara through to Kinshasa?
Nothing at all. I would say this categorically. Because right now, I'm very much disturbed about what's happening in Eritrea. Personally, I was involved when Isaias was here with Barakat Selassie. He was teaching in our department. I was with him when they were nobody. They were not in power yet. If Herman Cohen and others didn't broker the peace in England, at Lancaster House, for
right.
his narrative.
Right.
I remember him very well as a person when Barack Selassie was in our department working for them. When I read in the internet now what is happening to these Eritreans, I'm very disappointed because you have thousands of Eritreans that are dying in the Mediterranean now. There are Eritreans who are now in Israeli jail. Some of them are killed by ISIS. I am very disturbed about what's happening now. Unfortunately, the Israeli government has worked out a deal with Kagame to get all those illegal immigrants, Eritreans, to be sent to Rwanda. This is the latest agreement.
Very interesting.
Which is sad.
Very interesting, Himbara. So the illegal aliens in Israel are headed to your motherland, Rwanda?
But Shaka, no, thank you. If I could respond to the same question you posed to my colleague.
The new bleed of African leaders?
Yeah, basically the United States approach that seems to have kind of shifted from strengthening democratic institutions, the rule of law, onto the issues of stability and peace and that kind of, and terrorism and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a bit kinder to the United States,
mm-hmm.
and here
and other development partners for that matter.
No, I'm talking about United yes. States for one particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the U.S. is a great friend of African people.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I say that? If I see, for example, the support the United States gives to Africa. Oddly enough, the great support began under most unlikely head of state here,
mm-hmm.
George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
When he came in, basically the U.S. was supporting Africa by a sum of around $2 billion
mm-hmm.
a year.
Mm-hmm.
He pushed that up at the time he was leaving office to $8 billion a year.
You're talking about
George Bush.
PEPFAR?
Yeah.
Program?
No, I'm talking about the general. These mm-hmm. would be health
yeah,
programs.
Fighting malaria, tuberculosis.
Yes, but
HIV,
also economic
AIDS.
Development, mm-hmm. agriculture.
But what about Bill Clinton? We're talking about AGOA.
No. That came later. No,
much earlier.
Okay, so let's forget him for the time being. I'm talking now about the figures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then President Obama came in. The figure climbed. Now we're talking $10
billion.
Mm-hmm. Now, let us also give them Americans credit.
Mm-hmm.
They make the right noise.
Right.
So the United States stands for democracy, the rule of law. Lately, they are on the record saying that whether these African leaders that want to cling on to power, whether they are their friends or not friends, they must not amend constitutions to suit their own ends.
We'll come back to that aspect later because the time happens not to be our best ally.
In a nutshell, I agree. There is a shift from democratic concerns
mm-hmm.
onto anti-terrorism that
is very problematic. Yes.
We'll come back later to that.
We'll come back to
now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA US Africa Policy. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a look at the five pillars of U.S. policy towards Africa. Number one, support democracy and the strengthening of democratic institutions, including free, fair, and transparent elections. Number two, support African economic growth and development. Number three, assist in conflict prevention, mitigation, and resolution. Number four, support presidential initiatives such as the Global Health, Feed the Future, and the Global Climate Change Initiative. Number five, work with African nations on multinational issues such as drug smuggling, money laundering, illicit arms, and human trafficking.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart. And, of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. I'm sorry that I had to interject Dr. Himbara, because there is no democracy in Studio 52. If you are told by the producer to go for a break, you have to go.
Yes.
So I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Rwandan heart. Forgive me for that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Now, David, you talked about, of course, how the U.S. government now seems to be focusing on the issue of respect for term limits in as far as Africa is concerned. Is that what we are trying to say?
Yes, please.
Does this, in a way, remind you of a major statement made by U.S. President Barack Obama back in 2009 in Accra, the Ghanaian capital, and I was there with him. He talked about how Africa does not need strong men. It needs rather strong institutions. There are a lot of people, in fact, who have been saying that he pretty much talked the talk and has not been able so far to walk that talk. Do you agree with those critics?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it takes two people to tango.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is not Africa. When I think we have to be very sympathetic when we have to look at the people he has to deal with,
mm-hmm.
the leaders of Africa. Let's quickly take a look. Let's quickly take a stock. Say, on the democratic front, that, you know, countries not only have elections, but have independent judiciary, space between parliaments and the executive, regular, credible elections. How many of those? I can count a handful. We can talk about Senegal. We can talk about Ghana. We can talk about South Africa. We can talk about Tanzania. We can talk about Botswana.
Mauritius.
Mauritius.
Namibia.
And in Namibia. Yes.
Benin.
And Benin, yes.
There is a talk of third term.
Yeah, but I don't think. It's okay. We went away from dictator Matthew Kareku.
Okay, very, very good. So you have those.
Nigeria, of course. You can't forget Nigeria, the big one.
Yes. Imagine we are celebrating. Imagine we are celebrating the fact that someone gives power to a winner. Isn't that incredible?
An incumbent in Africa handing over power peacefully to a leader of a major opposition political party.
That speaks volumes, Shaka.
But of course, you cannot, for example, underestimate the pressure that also came from Washington and London. That those elections had to be elections, not selections.
Very good. So on one hand, you have those. But now, on the extreme end, you have what I call the 10 dinosaurs. These are rulers that have been in power for at least 20 years. Mm-hmm. There you have the Angola, Equatorial Guinea.
Teodoro Obiang.
Yes. You've got homeland.
José dos Santos of Angola.
Yeah, your homeland.
Yoweri Museveni, of course, of Uganda.
Of course, we have the
Robert Gabriel Mugabe.
I have the Cameroon.
Paul Obiya.
Cameroon. So you have that.
What about Paul Kagame, by the way?
Okay, now, among the 10, I pull out 2.
All right.
That they have gone even beyond the pale. I call those totalitarian. Because even the other 8, you know, take Uganda, for example. There is what we could call media. The judiciary once in a while passes, overrules the state. The opposition, well, okay, they are beaten, but they are there.
They hold, quote-unquote, periodic elections?
Yes, okay.
Are they elections real?
Okay, so hold on to the point. Mm-hmm. But now the other 2 I'm talking about. Mm. I'm talking about Eritrea. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Rwanda. Mm. These are totalitarian states.
What about Equatorial Guinea?
I don't put it in that category. Here is how I define.
The last election, you got 97%.
No, it's not
you
election
think that
I'm talking about.
Jesus Christ, if he came back here, as he's beloved.
No, all the 10 have no credible elections. That we agree. But the 2 I'm talking about, it's beyond this.
Why is it beyond that?
The definition is here that it's that drive to control the mind, to control everything of the citizen.
At least they don't pretend.
Yes, they don't pretend.
Yes.
Where every 10 houses, anyone who does anything in every 10 houses or mudugudu in Rwanda, the state will know. Just like that. Now, I don't think such a thing is possible in Uganda. Uganda's too chaotic. People go around their business.
Actually, it is very interesting that you say that because that system was, in fact, directly borrowed, guess where? From Uganda.
But
except that in Uganda,
it
doesn't work anymore. But, they have other structures.
Yes.
Which essentially are through the state.
Okay.
They call them district security officers, and down there you have Gomborora and what have you, until you get those 10 houses you are talking about, my friend. And all these people, by the way, borrowed the system from a man who used to be called the King of African Kings, brother leader, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi of
brother
Libya.
Let me tell you what we're talking about here, the difference of the other 2 I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. 40 bodies found floating in a lake. People assassinated in South Africa, people who oppose the regime. Mm-hmm. The opposite, basically, three things happen to anyone who fall out of line. In prison, disappearance, death.
So you've also been following the African scene. Do you agree with Dr. Himbara?
Yeah, I will support and I want to amplify the point he's making. I have been saying this over and over again in many places, in America and elsewhere. When you look at nation building and state building in Africa, what he's saying, he comes with the metaphor of the 10 dinosaurs in African politics. Now, you can go critically, you can have a good master's student or PhD student to really take each one of these people and talk about. Right now, they talk about North Korea on the Red Sea. Somebody is making a metaphor out of it. Mm-hmm. Because you're talking about Isaias and the Eritreans. You know, they have a Greek name. Eritrea is a Greek word for the Red Sea in Greece, in ancient Greek.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making a pun on that. North Korea in the Red Sea.
Right.
You see, the dictatorship, they are parallel. Kagame and Isaias are similar. What he is saying, they learn from Museveni. And then he brought another metaphor, which is now totally discredited, Gaddafi. Gaddafi ruled from 1969, when he took power from a royal family, until he died, over 40 years. You see, one thing that has to be borne in mind about these new dictatorships, that's why I want the American government to be pushed forward. During Obama's last days, we had a dialogue here before. I told you, it's not over. Obama is going to push. We have to push these people towards democracy. You cannot do it. It takes two to tangle. You cannot change African dictatorship unless the African people wake up.
Absolutely.
So the Senegalese proved that. The Senegalese proved that with Abdoulaye Wade. He wanted to follow Obasanjo. Obasanjo was supporting him. He wanted to have a third term.
You raised a very interesting question. In fact, when you talk about these totalitarian dictators and what have you, someone will quickly say, why don't the people vote them out? Like they voted out, for example, Abdoulaye Wade in Senegal. Like, for example, the Nigerians refused to grant Olusegun Obasanjo a third term.
Yes.
Like they refused to grant a third term to Frederick Chiluba of Zambia.
Yes.
Like they refused to grant a third term to Bakiri Muluzi of Malawi.
Yes.
Why can't that happen in Rwanda? Why can't it happen in Uganda? Why can't it happen in Equatorial Guinea? Why can't it happen in Cameroon, in Sudan, in South Sudan? Why?
Okay, now.
In Eritrea, in Ethiopia?
No. See, I think you're raising a very fundamental issue. And most of our colleagues who are political scientists, whether they're in America or in Oxford or in Australia, they are looking at it. The problem of these tyrannies in Africa, how do you grapple with these tyrannies? Many of our scholars in the 70s and 80s who were addressing Mobutu and others, these were beneficiaries of the Cold War. Museveni, Isaias, and others benefited from a presidential handshake of Bill Clinton. In many ways,
Clinton has actually characterized him, and I was watching him on television, on CNN, when Bill Clinton was in Haiti during the earthquake. He said, why doesn't Haiti learn from Rwanda, for example, where you have this incredible leader, Paul Kagame, who he characterized as one of the greatest leaders of our time, a man who has pulled off remarkable reconciliation, for example. You know, I was not born speaking English, but at least I happen to know that when you talk about reconciling, you talk about two groups of people being reconciled, correct?
Yes.
Now, I'm wondering, of course, whether that has really happened. And in fact, Tony Blair, a man who came from a country that, in fact, invented or discovered the Magna Charta, who went to Oxford to boot, just like Bill Clinton, a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, has described Paul Kagame as a visionary leader. These people must know what they are talking about. In any case, let's go for a break, and we'll come back to that. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan who responded to our question of the week.
Often Jeremiah from Kampala in Uganda writes, U.S. policy has been a 50-50, that's what I think, in promoting democracy and rule of law on the continent. This is why the U.S. will support or side with leaders who are their puppets. But the U.S. has also helped bring about good governance and respect for rule of law and democracy in Africa. But in the end, it's up to us, the Africans, to bear the greatest responsibility to do it.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Follow, join VOA. This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Promoting freedom and democracy and protecting human rights around the world are central to U.S. foreign policy, and it definitely seemed to be the purpose of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's recent trip to Kenya, Somalia, Djibouti, and Nigeria. His travel comes ahead of President Barack Obama's scheduled visit to Kenya in July for the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, a forum that connects local businesses with international groups and government. This leads us to our question of the week, asking, to what extent, in your view, is U.S. policy promoting democracy and the rule of law in Africa? Well, thanks, everyone, for using all our social media platforms to communicate to us. Let's begin with a comment from Obute Onwuka from Yola in Nigeria, who writes, their policies are hurting U.S. Their policies are hurting us, actually. Rather, they aren't encouraging peace. Rather, they indirectly promote war through some zealous politicians in order to tap into our natural resources. Has anybody noticed that America does not intervene in a country with little or no resources? Well, another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA US Africa Policy. If you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Jackson Peter of Cape Town in South Africa, who tweets that US policy toward Africa, it's a win-win relation for greedy African leaders, but win-lose for the people. Blame Africa, not the United States. Well, let's take a look at another tweet, this time from Collins Upson from the United States. He tweets that this policy can work if Africans are ready to obey and if the USA can give a clean policy. Well, Shaka, a range of opinions here. Your take on these comments.
Indeed. Professor of Comparative Politics and African Studies, your response, your reaction to that.
Yeah, I think all of the people who are, they're undercoing the reality, to be or not to be. It is very interesting that Ali Mazrui is gone. We lost Ali a lot. Ali Mazrui would have written a very interesting piece about the inauguration of Buhari. Shakespeare is still alive. Shakespeare is still alive in Nigerian politics because Buhari quoted Shakespeare, and somebody quoted when they said there's a tide in the affairs of men at
Florida. Yes, indeed.
You see, so what is very interesting, when Shaka brought the issue with regard to these dictators in Africa, you go back to Shakespeare, you're talking about many people being killed. You go back to what Shakespeare said about evil leaders, evil people, when he said, the evil that lives after them, you see, but their good are entered in their bones. So Museveni, Kagame, and all these monsters that you are identifying, they have grandkids. They must remember what their grandkids are going to be thinking about, because you see, you are going to be marginalized. So if your grandfather is a president or a leader and he doesn't behave well, they should pay attention to their grandkids.
But what about the issue of accountability? If in fact you agree that instead of being perhaps a new bleed of African leaders, who obviously are also the beacons of hope for African democracy, that in fact perhaps they may, in fact, perhaps they should be referred to as a new breed of African dictators, a new breed of dictators who have read Shakespeare, Bernard Shaw, Chaucer, who have read, of course, Ngugi wa Thiong'o, who know about Thomas Jefferson,
yes.
who know about John Fitzgerald Kennedy King. Saying, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I mean, they present themselves like that. Why can't they be considered to be a new breed of African leaders?
Shaka, you asked a very, very important question earlier that I must go back to. It's related to what you're saying. You asked, how come African people are not rebelling against these dinosaurs?
If they are that bad.
Yes, if they are that bad. The African people are actually, in fact, doing it. The Burkine said, enough is enough. They sent the dictator.
Handsome Blaise.
Yeah.
Blaise Compaoré.
Yes. People in DRC Congo, they said, no, enough is enough. They went on the streets. The Senate had to stop its plan of playing around with the constitution.
In Burundi,
people on the streets. Now, the only difference is where, again, is the totalitarian tool that I talked about. Let me give you...
But people will argue back, if I may say, because we have to go for another, interaction with my colleague before we come to that.
Yeah.
Just sit on that thought.
Yeah.
And I will come back to you, and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Mariama, do you have any more feedback to share with our audience, please?
Absolutely. Let's move on to a posting from Michael Tite from Tema in Ghana, who writes, why do we always look up to them, in this case, the United States, before we do what is right? What is right that we don't have as a continent? We don't need the U.S. in Africa. We are capable of making this continent a better place. The corrupt leadership in Africa is why the U.S. has taken advantage of the African continent. Well, while we're at it, let's take a look at another Facebook comment, this time from Christopher Mpokigwa, I think I got the name right, in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, who writes, America does not promote democracy in Africa, but it promotes her interests regardless whether a particular state is democratic or not. Shaka, not a lot of love here. Once again, is it fair? And your thoughts on these comments?
Certainly not, Mariama. So what about that, the good professor, the good doctor?
Yes. So the totalitarian, why are the people not rising? I was saying that.
Yes.
In fact, it's funny that you mentioned, it's interesting that you mentioned that Bill Clinton painted the Ruth Rose picture about Rwanda in Haiti.
Yes.
Do you actually know that this so-called Singapore of Africa, Rwanda, it's poorer than Haiti?
You're talking about the Singapore of Lee Kuan Yew?
Yes. The per capita income in Haiti is $800.
Yes.
In Rwanda, it's $630.
But Haiti, of course, lives in the Western Hemisphere where okay. the cost of living is much
so
higher.
Never mind. So now, here is a surprise. When, in a few months, you are actually going to see millions of people onto the streets of Kigali demanding that Kagame remains king.
Yes.
And how has he done that? The Nyumba Kumi. He has already intimidated 3 million Rwandans. These are villagers. And
how do you know that? You are not there. Someone might ask. What is the evidence?
There is a lot of evidence.
For example?
First, hear me out. The evidence is simply this. The genuine opposition people, as I said, are either in prison, they're in exile, they're dead or they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So the what you may call political parties in Rwanda are the ones actually who are leading the campaign to change the constitution.
And they're about 10.
Yeah, so that Kagame stays in power.
What about the party... And the supporters of Victor Ngabire. What about the supporters and the party of Victor Ngabire, for example, who is in prison?
Well, but where is the space? What do you think they can do? They can't do
does
much.
Does she deserve an opinion?
If the leader is in prison, the party is not registered, so what do you expect?
Are you suggesting that the vast majority of the Rwandese people have abdicated their citizenship, their responsibility, and are not in the business of even pretending to own the right to own an opinion?
In Rwanda, and the same thing as Eritrea, you faced three choices. Either toe the line, or lose your livelihood by taking an opinion, disappear, or die. Interestingly.
But I have been told that Rwanda is doing the right thing, that when it comes to the issue of service delivery, that is like a world champion.
He is a surprise shocker, and this goes to some of the commentaries that are talking about the United States. The ambassador of the United States in 2012, Susan Rice, she goes to Kigali. She says, in a public statement, says, Rwanda has improved delivery, but however, the delivery is what we see here in the city, but behind the city, there is a darker side. People disappear. So United States was giving a signal.
Well, she was then, of course, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. Yes. Now she, even better, she is the National Security Advisor.
Yes.
But I have yet to hear a statement from the White House.
Yes. Now, the United States, on two occasions in the last week, a statement was made. No, three times. Whether you are our friend or an adversary, when it comes to the issue of amending the Constitution to remain a strong man, it's non-negotiable.
I'm afraid time is not our best ally. Yes. We'll have to come back to that later. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, heads of states are meeting at the African Union Assembly in Johannesburg. We'll discuss their agenda and response to a daunting number of vital concerns next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
I understand that there are, of course, telephone callers from the lifeline of the show, and of course, those are telephone calls from the African continent. Good evening, Andrew from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Shaka. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. How are you today?
Good, good. Mr. Shaka, I want to tell you the U.S. approach, for their foreign policy approach, I think beginning with the Clinton time or even before them, Their foreign policy has been to export democracy and its principles to foreign countries or to foreign nations. But I want to ask you, Mr. Shaka, you tell me just one country. Mention one country that is better off democratically because of the U.S. intervention. For example, they were in Somalia in 1998. They went to Kosovo. They were in Bosnia. They were in Haiti. The talk of Afghanistan, the crisis in Iraq, recently in Libya. all in name of exporting democracy and its principles. Are these countries any better, Mr. Shaka? Secondly,
so what would you like? What would you like to see being exported from the United States to Africa? Dictatorship?
You see, to fight tyranny and oppression using tyrannical and oppressive means.
Are you suggesting?
Single-minded ruthless fanaticism by becoming equally ruthless and fanatical will not cause any justice or bring about any meaningful democracy.
Are you suggesting? Yes, are you suggesting, my brother, frankly, that fighting terrorism or service delivery and democracy are mutually exclusive in your view?
I am only concerned with the intervention. I think the least time unit needed for democracy to prosper is at least a generation. You cannot expect a country like Rwanda that was in a crisis just yesterday to have all ideas of democracy well enshrined.
What about a country like Germany? The last time I checked, Germany, of course, was involved in two world wars, losing them very, very badly. But if you go there, I'm sure that it will be a different ball game. Well, a reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. I'll continue our discussion in a moment, and so please, don't go away.
The Bureau of African Affairs has contributed to demonstrable progress in each of these areas in recent years. It has worked to strengthen democratic transitions in Ivory Coast, Guinea, and Niger, successful elections in Nigeria, and an independence referendum in South Sudan. The Bureau promotes African economic development through the annual Africa Growth and Opportunity Act. It actively works to end sexual and gender-based violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo and seeks to eliminate atrocities perpetrated by the Lord's Resistance Army throughout Central Africa. Feed the Future, the U.S. government's global food security initiative, focuses on 12 African countries. And finally, the Global Health Initiative hopes to invest $63 billion over 6 years to help partner countries improve the health of women, newborns, and children.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Once again, let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick, from the great nation of Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Shaka. My name is Patrick Okrafo in Nigeria. Mr. Shaka, my question goes to our guest tonight. You see, this issue of fighting terrorism, terrorists. The terrorists stay in our community, and the traditional rulers know people that is in their community. And I want to find out from our guest, why is it that our traditional rulers, they are not making an effort to let the government know what is happening in their community so that this issue of people coming to say that they know them and they don't want to tell the government. Why is this so? Now look at what is happening in Burundi. The Burundi head of state, he has been anointed by God. Fine. I agree that God anointed him, but the issue that the traditional rulers are there, they will not tell him the truth that this is what the people are saying, and they will close their mouth. Why is this so?
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you very much. Terrific question. In fact, Patrick might have added that the African leaders, who of course someone might call rulers, when they get this cooperation with the Western world about fighting terrorism, it is like a godsend, because I have heard they use it, in fact, against legitimate political opposition. Have you experienced that, Himbara?
Yeah, well, again, Rwanda is a case in point. Rwanda has become the fifth largest peacekeeping country.
Mm-hmm.
And how did they manage to do that?
And they are doing a very good job, by the way.
Yeah, so
you can't take that credit away from Rwanda.
Yeah. So part of the U.S. provides logistics, the planes that take the soldiers, the training, and so on. But the question...
They were the first to go to Darfur?
Yeah. So here is a question.
The Central African Republic?
So here is a question. You support a military to go and do this impressive work, but the same military that is repressing its own citizens. It's the same. It's the same machinery. It's the same machinery that goes to cause trouble in DRC.
Is the international community aware of that?
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure. Well, we know that the international community is aware of that because in 2012, the donors led by the United States cut or suspended aid from Rwanda precisely because of its sponsor of terror in DRC.
And Rwanda threatened to withdraw its peacekeepers
and then they
from
kept quiet.
Around the world.
Yes. So you see the contradiction.
I see.
So a professional army go and keep peace, but cause chaos in the neighborhood and terrorize your citizen.
Let's go again to the lifeline of the show, which of course are the telephone callers. Good evening, Samuel from Uganda. You're most welcome. Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka Sali. How are you?
You're terrific. How are you today?
I'm very fine. Let me push this question to my friend, Professor Nyang, whom we have been on Straight Talk Africa for so many years. Professor Nyang, sir, how is United States policy towards Africa going to support democracy, rule of law, African economic growth, and global climate change? And the next I'm proposing, if President Obama is coming in July to Africa, is it possible for him to stop at Entebbe Airport on his way to Nairobi, Kenya?
Very interesting. Well, looks like you're a very, very important person right here.
Oh.
Go for it. Go for the answer, man. He needs the answer.
What I can say to him really is, I told you, Shaka, that the Obama administration is not finished with Africa yet. He has his second term going through. We have to make sure that all the points he's in, these monsters, these dinosaurs, you see, like an apple on the tree about to fall.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best metaphor one can identify them. And these people's longevity in office is not good for themselves if they want to really have good legacies and to be remembered by their people. So what President Obama is going to do, he has to really look back at Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, remember, was very much for democracy and human rights against Idi Amin.
But
remember
guess what? He became one-term U.S. president.
Yeah, that's what the problem for him, you see. Mm. So the thing is both Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., and President Obama have two terms. We have to build on this momentum so that whoever is the president of the United States next time around, what Richard Haas was saying to the Americans, let's deal with our own domestic problem first. Then we can go and help the other people. It takes two to tango.
It takes two to tango, but I think more importantly, frankly, it seems to me from all I have seen, the answer has to come from the African people.
It has to.
Because the intellectual and information balance of power has been shifting in their favor.
Yes.
They have to wake up and assert their citizenship.
I agree with that.
Not accept to be treated as subjects, really.
No, I agree with that.
Let's go to, again, the lifeline of the show. Good afternoon, Mary from the state of Maryland. You're most welcome. Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, Chester, thank you for giving me chance. Actually, two ideas. I'm Okonjo.
You have a minute. You have a minute, Mary. You have a minute. Time is not a bestseller, please.
Perfect. On the issue of what U.S. is doing, it's actually doing a great job, but it's our duty as Africans, as they say, to implement that. And with that, I will simply go to Liberia with the President Sirleaf. When you asked her what she wants to be remembered for when she leaves office, she said, I want Liberians to know that when I met them, I changed their lives. And when I leave, they will remember that I changed their lives. I want you actually to add positively, because you can change lives either positively or negatively. So that is our take as Africans, so that when you are in power, respect some limits. I mean, do what you can in that period, and then leave the office so that you be an example to others.
Point,
the
point well made. Really? But what about the argument of the supporters of term limits who say that you're looking at an individual who is unique, someone that you can't possibly see in the next 100 years?
You know why? That is, for the case of Rwanda, it's a special case because this is a country which has had a lot of atrocities, so they don't trust the leaders to be sincere. That's why I'm saying, actually, they should be given another chance, not of the person in the office, but another person to try out.
Thank you.
But these are people who are really traumatized.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, they say that Kagame, of course, has created a Singapore, frankly, a Singapore of Africa. And yet, when you look, compare and contrast from what I hear, I don't see how you can compare Kagame with Lee Kuan Yew. Lee Kuan Yew was a uniter. No. He was a reconciler. He was a man who reached out to the Mali, the majority population, who were underdeveloped, and brought them up. He did not have this vanity thing. He did not. He was not a person who liked money, big projects, and stuff like that. So it's a totally different ballgame. Unfortunately, time is not our best ally. Yeah, we have to go to a very bad situation here. Before we go, we would be remiss if I didn't mention the death of Kenyan scholar and economist Professor Mwangi Kimenyi, who passed away on Saturday, June 6th, in Baltimore, Maryland, after lengthy illness. At the time of his death, Dr. Kimenyi was a former director and senior researcher fellow at the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institution, based here in Washington, D.C. Known as a highly respected economist globally, Dr. Kimenyi has taught economics for several years and has worked for the World Bank, the United Nations, and African Development Bank. He also served as a member of the advisory board of the School of Economics at the University of Nairobi. He was the founding executive director of the Kenya Institute for Public Policy and Research Analysis in Kenya, known as KIPLA, from 1999 to 2005. During the 15 years that we have been on air, Dr. Kimenyi became a staple on Straight Talk Africa for his expert analysis on the African continent. His last appearance on this program was January 14th of this year. He will be truly missed among my colleagues here at the Voice of America. Heartfelt condolences to his family. May his soul rest in peace eternally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, based here in Washington, D.C., and Dr. David Himbara, expert analyst on development issues in Africa. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's a day for Africa with James Butte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.